Good afternoon, and welcome to the 2012 Retail Marketing Virtual Conference and Expo presented by Retail Online Integration. I'm Joe Keenan, Senior Editor of Retail Online Integration. I'm pleased to welcome you to our closing keynote session, Four Tablet Design Principles to Drive Engagement and Sales. I want to thank our sponsor for this session, Social Annex. Here to provide you with tips on optimizing your website for tablet shoppers, a growing and profitable segment of the consumer population, are Stephen Burke, Vice President of Mobile at Resource Interactive, a digital marketing agency, and his colleague, Matt Grover, Technology Director of Resource Interactive's Consumer Products Group. Before we get started, let me point out a few quick tips on how to make the most of today's live webinar. First, if you have any technical difficulties, troubleshoot by clicking on the Help widget at the bottom of the console marked with a question mark, or let us know via the Q&A box. You can also use the Q&A box to submit your questions to our panelists at any time during this presentation. We'll be addressing select questions at the end of the hour. Please make sure you turn off any pop-up blockers on your computer so that you can utilize all of the widgets and bells and whistles on this console. Speaking of bells and whistles, please click on the Tips for Attendees widget below to learn what all of the widgets on the console do and how you can customize your experience today. You can even tweet right from the console. And lastly, if you leave this session at any time or you would like to view it again later, you can access the entire presentation from the auditorium in the Retail Marketing Virtual Show on-demand environment, which will be open for 3 months beginning on Monday, April 23rd. So without further ado, I'd like to hand it over to Stephen Burke to get things started.
Thank you very much, Joe, and good afternoon, everyone. We sincerely appreciate you joining us. You know, they say when you speak at a trade show or a conference, you know, you don't want to be the person right after lunch or right before people head to the parking lot. But with a virtual conference, I think it's really a great opportunity to reach you. We welcome any questions you want to send along during the conversation here and look forward to a productive session. This is a presentation that I initially made at the National Retail Federation in January in New York, and we've had the opportunity to update it given the enormous and rapid growth of tablet usage in the United States, and we'll walk through some key statistics, but it's really one of the most profound inflection points that we've seen in the consumer electronics and computing industry really over the last 25 or 30 years. And I think the impact of the tablet is really just beginning to be perceived by most marketers and brands. A little bit about us at Resource. We were founded in 1981 by Nancy Kramer, currently our chairman. We're privately held with offices in Columbus, where our headquarters is, San Francisco, where I'm based out of, Chicago and Cincinnati, Ohio. We've enjoyed strong growth over the last 4 or 5 years as digital has become central to what brands and retailers are doing. We've now grown to 400-plus associates. We had the pleasure of being named one of Ad Age's top agencies of the year last year. And as I said, we're proudly independent and have been owned and operated by Nancy and her partner, Kelly Mooney, for several years. I've been in the mobile industry since 1992, going back to the creation of a joint venture with a company called Qualcomm when I worked at Sony. And we essentially commercialized digital cellular, the format that Verizon, Sprint, and others have used for the last 15 or 20 years called CDMA. We started out by launching the handsets, and then gradually my career has evolved into mobile applications and services, including launching the mobile web with a company called OpenWave, the creator of what was called WAP, or the Wireless Access Protocol. And then mobile video services, mobile search services. I also built and sold a mobile search network. I wish I had held on to it a little bit longer, mobile social network. When I see that Instagram got $1 billion from Facebook for photo sharing, I was just a little bit ahead of the curve. What we're doing at Resource today is serving about 40 clients with a wide range of mobile services, and we're really trying to solve for the last mile problem, linking online and offline behavior connected by mobile devices, including smartphones and tablets. Our clients at Resource really come in three sectors: consumer products, retail, and technology. All of the clients on this list are clients we have done work for around mobile, as well as e-commerce, social, media and marketing, and a wide range of services aimed at reaching today's digital consumer. And really, digital is in our DNA. Since our inception in 1981, where our first client was Apple Computer, through the work we did with Victoria's Secret in the late 1990s, we're actually the company that broke the internet with the Victoria's Secret fashion show in 1999, through really developing a wide range of consumer applications and services. For example, for Sherwin-Williams, we created the ColorSnap application, now downloaded over 1 million times across iPhone, Android, and BlackBerry, and soon coming to you in a tablet format, enables you to take pictures, color match, and find locations and get guidance on color choices. Over the last few years, we've been extremely active in commerce innovation and social commerce, working for clients like Procter & Gamble, Nestle, and many others. We also have a lot of emphasis on thought leadership. Our president, Kelly Mooney, has written a book called The Open Brand, which really emphasizes how brands, retailers, trying to reach consumers, need to embrace the modern two-way communication path made possible through the web and through mobile communication. And we like to think of ourselves as visionary activators. We see what's coming next, but we want to build what works today. And one of the investments we make as a business, which is uncommon for agencies of our size, is to have a dedicated lab team that's really focused on innovation and trends. Really the latest innovation that we've been working on is the theme Everywhere Commerce, which is really developing around the idea that the modern consumer should be able to browse, shop, and buy across any device in any environment, and be engaged by the brand in a two-way communication, not simply a broadcast communication. So now we'll switch to our theme, which is the emergence of the tablet consumer. And really, every stat we look at is kind of mind-boggling when you consider the iPad is only 2 years old, and it's really the device that has defined the tablet experience. Android is catching up in certain categories, but the dominant platform for tablet engagement is, and for the foreseeable future will remain, the iPad. So we've seen really about 75 million units sold in less than 2 years, and worldwide sales are expected to grow about 5x over the mid-range period. I frankly think that this number is conservative and will find much higher penetration over the next 2 or 3 years. Tablets outsold laptops in the Q4 of 2011. In the first weekend post iPad 3, although Apple won't let us call it that, 3 million units were sold. And within 2 weeks, IDC had actually revised its tablet sales forecast for 2012 from about 80 million units to over 100 million units. And I think we'll see this year end at about 130 or 140 million units. It's just a remarkable story of device penetration. When you look at what people do and the purchase decision they're making around a tablet device, a mobile device, or a PC, the vast majority of consumers see the tablet as an additional device to be used. although it did outstrip PC shipments in the fourth quarter. Obviously, for work purposes, the desktop or laptop PC remains a workhorse and a key area of engagement for marketers like yourselves. But what we're seeing is that increasingly consumers are gravitating towards the tablet as a place to learn, share, and make purchase decisions. Interestingly, moms are increasingly active tablet users, and this stat really fascinated me. In a survey recently done by MediaPost, they determined that over 30% of mothers with tablets spend more time on the tablet each week than on the PC, almost five times more time, 10 hours versus two. And 97% of the moms surveyed, it was a survey pool of about 3,500 consumers, said they had made a purchase using their tablet in the last month. The tablet can be described as a lean and glean device, whereas a smartphone, I like to use the term, is a search and destroy device. And don't let that term scare you. What it means is smartphones are used in periods of the day when people have limited time and yet a high propensity to need to find something out. They're in a store, they're on the go, they'll use their smartphone to text someone, to check Facebook, to ask friends about a sale, and they'll use that device in store if they want to get ratings and reviews or price comparisons, those sorts of things. But on the tablet, people spend an enormous amount of time both in their home and in other parts of the home, not just at a desk, but on the couch. Most engagement, according to surveys, is happening at the dining room table or the kitchen table first, and then the couch second. And what they're looking for is product information, maybe triggered by something they just saw on television. They're looking for ratings and reviews. They're looking for nearby stores. They're creating lists, they're checking availability, and then they're sharing recommendations with friends and family. The tablet experience, and this is corroborated by our friends at Apple iAd, is immersive in more ways than one. The length of time that people spend, for example, working or let's say absorbing an iMedia placement, whether it's through iAd or other ad networks, is about 3 to 4x what they spend on traditional iMedia. In certain instances, some campaigns have indicated results that show that people will spend more time on an ad on their tablet than they will, for example, watching it on a television set. And the other key trend, especially in the United States, is the growth of mobile commerce, the purchase of products through a connected device, whether it's a smartphone or a tablet. This is a Forrester chart that, frankly, is a little bit out of date already. 2012, the U.S. will actually do probably $16 to $20 billion in mobile commerce, making us the largest mobile commerce market in the world, surpassing Japan. And key drivers of that are people like eBay. If you look at today's New York Times, there's an article on eBay's results, which indicates that between eBay sales and PayPal, they expect to do about $15 billion in mobile commerce this year. Second to eBay is Amazon. And then there's a large number of sites I call the happy middle, who are doing between $500 million and $1 billion a year in transactions. Many of them are travel sites like Travelocity or Priceline, where people are making travel plans and purchase decisions while online. So the behavior is here. The point of this chart is that the behavior, the willingness to make a purchase on a connected device, a wirelessly connected device, is here. It's a matter of how we design experiences to reach the consumer. Finally, you know, the idea of couch commerce, we saw this emerge first in Japan around 2007 when consumers would be watching television and using their then smartphone to engage with brands and mobile commerce sites. People are spending more time in front of the television set looking at the tablet while they enjoy entertainment content, for example. And when you look at the performance last holiday season, beginning pre-Black Friday and running through Christmas, you can see that the tablet outstrips the smartphone during that period in terms of page views. It also accounted for very high traffic, about 7% of online sales during the holiday season came from iPads. And this is corroborated by our clients, by the way, almost across the board. Mobile traffic from tablets is approaching 10% worldwide. And the conversion rate on a tablet really exceeds that today of the desktop in many cases, and certainly exceeds that of the smartphone. Also, the size of the order, very interesting, significantly higher than on a smartphone and higher than on a desktop. From our side, on the agency side of the business, very often, since we deal with a number of retail clients, Kohl's, Victoria's Secret, Limited Stores, others, typically we're not that busy in the holiday season because we've shipped what we're going to ship and they're busy selling. What we found, though, is after the Black Friday traffic became apparent, a number of new clients emerged looking to accelerate their mobile presence. And actually, we've had an extraordinarily busy fourth quarter and first quarter beginning to meet demand for these kind of experiences. So now I want to turn to some of the core principles for designing with the tablet consumer in mind. And one of the things I'd like to say before we get into this is a lot of people think of the tablet in terms of an app platform, an app consumption platform, and it's obviously very powerful for that. But most statistics indicate that the American consumer is really looking for browsing experiences that meet their needs. They will definitely go into an app when it makes sense, but by about a two-thirds majority, people will spend more time browsing, looking for information or going directly to a brand's website than they will engaging through an app. Apps have to have a certain degree of utility, value, the ability to store, personalization, coupons, those sorts of things, gift lists, for the consumer to come back on a repeated basis. So when we think about the tablet consumer, we think about the consumer both as a browser and as an app consumer. So the four design principles that we try to embody through our creative teams and with our clients is you need to make the experience engaging, you need to make it shareable, and it's interesting, we'll talk about shareable, it's not just about posting on Facebook, shoppable, get them to the cart on time. There's some great examples out there of people who are doing that in a very clever and seamless way, and we'll talk through those. And then extendable. How do you extend the experience so that you're delivering more than an immediate product or brand message, but you're actually engaging the consumer across other, if you will, vectors of thinking? And we've got a couple of great examples of that as well. So to be engaging, and we're learning this every day. I'm not trying to presume that anybody is the leading expert on this. We had an interesting discovery a couple of weeks ago when we were doing a requirements document for an app that we're developing, and we realized that a lot of the language that we use in our requirements documents and architecture documents involve the term click. So click here, click here, click there. We need to change that nomenclature to swipe, right? To scan, to touch, because it's a very tactile experience for the consumer. And you can see this, you go to a restaurant and you see a child, you know, with the parent, and the child is 3 years old and he's cruising through an iPad app, right? They're swiping. They want to reach out and swipe the television set, right? They want to swipe the windshield on the car and change the view, right? So the behavior is very tactile, and it's portable, so people have it on their lap when they're watching television, when they're listening to the radio, when they're reading the newspaper. And they can immediately turn to the device and move into an engagement with your brand when they're prompted by something that they read or see or hear. So it engages the consumer on many levels, physically, intellectually, emotionally, obviously, and we need to take that into account as we build experiences. So couple of examples. Go to the App Store. This is about a year old now, a little bit older, but the Ralph Lauren RLX app is cool because it does some simple things really, really well. For example, it enables you to blow across the microphone in order to make the model fly or turn or pivot. It encourages you to tilt and shake the device to see how the clothing fits and moves on the body of the model, so you get this more tactile sensation associated with the experience of wearing their clothes. The Domino's Pizza Hero app is a game, basically, where you get to build your own pizza and earn points, and it's great for kids. They can sit there and they can spin a pizza, they can knead the dough virtually, they can add toppings, they can win prizes for doing that. It's a very interesting and relatively low-cost way for Domino's to be able to engage you. You can also order from the app, so it has obviously a commerce angle to it. But it really just makes the experience of having a Domino's pizza or deciding what you want to eat a little bit more interesting, a little bit more fun. I would say that a shortcoming, and this is common for pretty much every brand out there, I'd love to see Domino's put, some kind of call to action or notification that they have this app in their television advertising, in their print media, in the coupons and the printed matter that you get when you get a Domino's delivery. This is an area where I think most brands fall short. You build the mobile asset, and you hope people discover it, as opposed to building the mobile asset and driving people towards it. As a way of maintaining engagement on an ongoing basis. Another example of engagement in a B2C environment is for Sherwin-Williams. This is an application that we built that basically took an analog circular, a monthly publication, and using some tools from Adobe and some creative insights and a lot of let's call them dormant media assets that had been created but weren't really able to be used. We've been able to create an engaging platform for them to communicate with their do-it-yourself or DIY consumer. This is actually a tool that clients like yourselves can be trained to use so that you can begin to build it yourself. The Stir application is in the App Store. Actually, the spring issue is out now. This first application was launched in November and December. They've subsequently designed and built their own, and they're starting to bring it out in a cadence. Within the app, you're able to view videos, to consult with experts, to engage with a wide variety of content, and you can do it on a basis where you pick it up, use it for 5 minutes, put it down, go do something else, come back, and it's there. Unlike a printed circular or magazine that you might get in the mailbox, throw it on the kitchen counter, maybe you page through it, it's on the dining room table for a day, and then it goes into the recycling. This app stays on your device, and the tendency is to come back to it again and again, and consumers will immerse themselves in it more deeply. Another area that can be supportive of engagement for you as brands and marketers is to build metrics into these apps so that you can determine engagement, you can determine which articles are most popular, you can get feedback from the consumer. Our second principle, obviously, is to make it shoppable. You have a visual experience where everything can lead to commerce. The ads that either you have placed within an experience or maybe your trade partners are placing as part of your co-op or other programs can lead to a commerce opportunity. Videos that are embedded within the application, don't just point them out to YouTube, keep them within the app, can be a path for moving objects to the cart. And again, because engagement tends to be longer and deeper on a tablet right now, you have the ability to build a bigger basket. So we didn't do this, but I can say I love it. The Home Depot style guide, if you get a chance, download this, play with it. It's very simple, it's very direct, and it's extremely effective at showing the consumer a collection of, for example, patio furniture, where key pieces of the collection, there's a little plus sign on the screen. You click the plus sign, you get information. You can drop that object into your cart, or you can drop the entire collection into your cart with a single click. So let's say you just moved into a new house, you have a new patio or backyard, you go and look at the 6 or 8 or 12 sets that they've got, you like the way it looks, you click on it, you buy it, it's shipped to you, you're done. It's extremely effective, very simple, and elegantly done. I really give them an A-plus for it. The Nordstrom catalog, in a similar fashion, this enables Nordstrom to actually take the consumer across 10 or 12 different categories, from baby to men's fashions, enables them to have a deep dive into the product category, and also to drop objects into the cart and check out very directly and simply. It's got a little bit more to it than the Home Depot style guide, but I think that where the style guide is interesting, and the same is true of Nordstrom, I'm sure, is the seasonality of it. The fact that now Home Depot could actually do not just 2 or 3 of these a year, but could maybe do 6, could do things against particular periods of the year. Let's say we have another heat wave this summer. They could put out a guide around cooling. They could put a guide around sprinkler systems. It can be very flexible and can be done very quickly, associated with trends in the marketplace, ranging from weather to what social networks are saying. So another example of shoppable, and again, erring on the side of simplicity rather than complexity, is a Kohl's app that basically took a circular approach, married it to more detailed product information, and then aligned it with their web store in a way that enables the consumer to move quickly through this week's deals, see what he or she would like to purchase, go evaluate that, check out the ratings and reviews, and go straight to purchase. So one of the tendencies in building apps, especially for the tablet, is the tendency in certain cases to overbuild it away from your core objectives of engaging and creating shopping opportunities. So we sometimes spend as much time taking things out of ideation sessions as we do putting them in, as a way of ensuring that whatever we're building is demographically aligned for what that consumer is capable of doing and what that particular demographic is capable of consuming. Just trying to forward to the next slide. Let me click one more time, Alexis. Pardon me, we're just being asked to stand by while the slide changes, so please bear with us.
Stephen, I pushed for you. The shareable slide is live right now.
Okay. I am trying to see it. There we go. For some reason, it's not showing on my screen, but I do see it here with my colleague, so let me go from there. This is an area, so the tablet is shareable across two areas of behavior. The first is it has not yet penetrated the home in terms of every family member having a tablet. So mom may own the tablet, but her daughter may spend as much time using that device as mom does. You'll be on the couch, you'll see something, you'll hand it over to your son. So it's shared physically across family members, and that's something to take into account. And it's an opportunity to integrate social media and messaging in a better way, and I can't say, to be honest with you, to date we've seen great examples of that that go beyond, integrating a little bit of Twitter feeds, integrating things like, you know, Facebook likes and things like that. So, Alexis, if you want to go on to the next slide. Sephora, I think, has done some leading-edge work, and overall, if you're looking for comps out there in the industry, I encourage you to look at Sephora. They're not a client of Resource, but they've had a very strong mobile presence over the last 3 or 4 years. They're willing to move fast and experiment early, and they've done some very good things around integrating social sharing, especially around the idea of how one makes cosmetics decisions. You typically do that in conjunction with your friends or your peers, or counter staff who are helping you make a decision. So I would encourage you to look at Sephora as an example of somebody who's doing this well. You can go on to the next slide. Zappos, another great example of overall design and engagement beyond just the sharing. But they've also built a number of social and I would call them validation features, both in terms of sharing with friends and sharing with customer support staff to make sure you're making the right decision about the shoes that you're purchasing. They're now owned by Amazon, and as that has rolled out, I think they've become even more innovative and a little bit more daring in terms of the experiences that they're trying to incorporate into their app design and their tablet experiences. Please go ahead. And then the fourth principle is making it extendable. And this is an interesting area. So earlier I said that in the case of the Kohl's app, we really designed for simplicity. But in other instances, you may want to use the experience to really build a set of opportunities to educate, amuse, entertain, or otherwise engage the consumer. So you can both tailor the content to respond to, for example, surveys you might do over the life of 2 or 3 weeks of usage and find out what consumers are responding to. Or to, as you change your campaigns, if you're in a fashion area or something that's changing on a very rapid basis, be able to do that in a way that reflects what people have been clicking on, what they've been engaging with, those sorts of things. So if we go to the next slide. Anthropology is in here for a couple of reasons. The first is their head of digital has basically said that thanks to the success of the Anthropology iPad app last year, which was a double-digit contributor to their holiday revenues, they expect to see the iPad generate about 25% of their commerce revenues this year. So they've built a set of experiences that enable the consumer to really take a look at the collection and then figure out how to customize that collection for their purposes and then buy it very easily. The BMW magazine app, kind of like Stir, but Stir on steroids, really builds a lot of cultural and architectural and historical information around the BMW experience. So they've used that app as sort of a launching point to entertain and engage their consumer beyond the features of the automobile because they expect and they know from their research into their consumer that the consumer is a pretty sophisticated, educated, highly informed, and rather picky person who does a lot of research and exploration before they make a purchase decision. So they've designed an app around that insight into their consumer to give them more than just specs on tires and carburetors. Next slide, please. So we're now going to segue into moving away from talking about the app focus for tablets and more into the web and browsing focus for tablets. And to assist us with this, I've invited one of my colleagues, Matt Grover, to join. He's the technology director for our consumer products group, And he's been one of the leaders of an initiative that we call Responsive Experience Design, which is really next-generation website design, taking advantage of new tools, new browser capabilities, HTML5, a wide range of things. And Matt's going to walk us through the methodology behind responsive design and then some examples of recent work that are incorporating that and enabling our clients to build experiences that eliminate or minimize the requirement to build separate mobile experiences. Instead, this is an opportunity to design once and reach multiple devices. And Matt, please tell us more about that.
Great. Thanks, Stephen. We thought this would be a great opportunity to introduce the idea of responsive web design. We're talking about tablets, and really this addresses not only tablets, other mobile devices, but it's such a win-win right now, and it's a new thing that we've been working a lot with just over the last 6 months. And what it really helps you do, why it's a win-win, is it allows you as the brand owner to decrease your surface area, the amount of infrastructure and the things you need to own and manage and do to provide your web presence, while at the same time it allows you to increase your surface area with your customers, which is to the right-hand side of that slide, where a single web experience can now provide a desktop, tablet, and mobile phone experience, and even potentially beyond those three devices on into the higher-end digital TV. At the lower end, we joke about it, but someday the web-enabled wristwatch. There will be so many different devices are proliferating right now, and that's only growing. So it's really at its core a strategic approach, first of all, again, because of the win-win that we get from the brand side and the consumer side. But it's also a design approach. It's also thinking about the design of a site being more fluid, being less what we used to call pixel perfect, and more fluid about how we design and letting the layouts kind of move and shape the content and prioritize the content as it's presented to these different devices. But one of the most important things is that we've learned in these last few months, really looking closely at responsive, is that it's not about making assumptions for the consumer and deciding if the consumer is on a particular device or perhaps at a particular location that we should serve this content or provide this utility. It's really about allowing that entire experience to be available regardless of the endpoint, and that's what's most important about the thinking behind responsive. And then really the technology of it that supports this is, again, moving away from an assumptive approach and using a lot of device detection and trying to figure out what device is at the other end here and what am I going to serve them, but thinking more about just the width of the device. What is my viewport? How much space do we have? And we'll conform the layout and still provide all the content and the entire experience. And why that's so important is that, again, we can't be assumptive about someone who starts a shopping experience on their desktop and then is later viewing your web experience on a tablet or on any other mobile device. They want to link and share from place to place, and we don't want them to wind up at a dead end because we chose to not make certain content available on certain devices. So it's a way to make sure all that content has reach. And another area of value there is that we're finding is in search engine optimization. Of course, you've got to get people to the experience. And we find that when we have an MDOT site or a separate mobile experience of some kind or a separate tablet site, we can start breaking down our link equity by having those multiple that content being indexed multiple times. So another good reason. Let's take a look at a couple examples. These are helpful. I think, when we think of responsive, we certainly don't own this technology. We didn't come up with it. It's something that we're investing in and working on heavily. I've got to give credit to a guy named Ethan Marcotte who came up with this approach with Filament Design when they redesigned the BostonGlobe.com site, which was released last September. And it really produces an interesting effect where the web experience, you can actually see it shift if you open this up in a desktop browser and literally resize your browser window back and forth. You can see the entire experience change shape, if you will, and conform to the width of the device. So again, I'm not getting the experience based on that I'm on a web browser or that I'm on a tablet or I'm on a phone. It's just looking at my viewport. So Little Black Dress is our first example here. Is a new product introduction that we helped Brown-Forman launch back in February. With our new product launch, they were just interested in doing a web splash page, and we said, you know, we need to reach her on any device, wherever she might be. And it's a fairly simple site with just a few pages. Those are a great opportunity for us to look at the design approach. So everything that you see there between desktop, tablet, and mobile, it's coming from one site, lbdvodka.com, period. So whether I get that from a search result or an advertisement or a share, I'm going to find that in whatever context I'm in. Another great example that we have to share is also just launched recently. This is for HP, for the graphic arts group. They always have a significant presence at Drupa, which is an annual printing and imaging expo. It's held in Dusseldorf, actually coming up next month. And here we created another responsive experience, again, because you've got such a wide variety, not only of devices, but also of activities, pre-event planning, you know, looking at information about the event, trying to find out about HP's presence at the event, and then also when I'm at the event, I want to find my way around. So it helps with planning and participation in the event. Here we have made sure that all that functionality is available. So we have a consistent, you know, user experience, whether I'm thinking about planning my trip or whether I'm actually in the event participating. We don't subtract any content. We make sure everything is still available. And here is a good example of functionality. So it's important also to have uniform functionality. And here there's a mapping piece in here that's very important for helping folks find their way around the actual exhibits. And, again, whether I'm on a tablet or a phone, I can do that. And I think if we advance the slides, there are a couple built there that just show the three different experiences for that one. Not sure if everybody's seeing those right now. Okay, I'm clicking and now I see them. Okay, so here's desktop, a tablet, phone. Again, you can find that if you want to take a look. It's at hp.com/drupa_2012 is where that site is. And then final example, not sure if everybody's seeing. Okay, sorry. The last example is for Purina Cat Chow. This is a client we've been working with for a couple years, and we're planning a mobile presence actually earlier in the year last year, and then shifted gears and worked with their brand team to consider a responsive web presence. We knew that the mobile metrics were strong, and we knew that there's not only the product content, but really engaging cat content there that consumers were seeking, and we kind of shifted gears, and again, thinking about consistent content, consistent functionality, we wanted to make sure everything was available all the way down to the mobile device, and we also wanted to manage it, manage the content in one place and take advantage of a single repository for all that content, and then make sure that was had as much reach as possible. So those are just a few examples of some work that we've done. And I think, unless Stephen, if you had anything else, I think we're open for questions.
I just want to let the audience know that Matt also today published a blog post on responsive design. We actually have a series going on our website. If you go to resource.com/wethink, you'll see a series of postings on a number of topics, but specifically on responsive design and some really thought-provoking ways to look at it in terms of how your consumer is served by it, as well as your own business needs. So with that, we thank you for your interest. We're happy to open it for questions. There is one question asking us to go back to one of the slides, the first extendable slide. Alexis, could you take us back there? And Matt, there's a question on what is the website for Little Black Dress?
Oh, sure. The URL for the site is at lbdvodka.com.
Thanks, Stephen and Matt. This is Joe again. I just want to remind everyone in the audience that you can use the Q&A box to submit your questions to our panelists. So a question I have here, how can brands go about determining and segmenting which of their customers are tablet shoppers and are most likely to become tablet shoppers in the future? Is there kind of an idea around thought of segmenting there?
You can do it, I think, on a couple of levels, Joe. The first is using broad sort of secondary industry research that tells you, for example, that Hispanic Americans are disproportionately high purchasers and users both of smartphones and tablets, with higher penetration among Hispanics than among any other ethnicity in the U.S. right now, relatively speaking. So you can start there. If you have a business with that demographic focus, that will tell you in that way. The second way you can do it is through adding device detection capability to your site so that you know, and many people already have this, they know an iPad is touching their site versus an Android smartphone and those sorts of things. But having device detection is probably the most efficient way to do that. So I think those two are a good starting point. And then we do believe, and we've done this for a number of clients, that doing some primary research, some focus groups, for example, we did a strategy for a large national retailer and went and validated some of the assumptions there based on primary research. It took us about 3 weeks. It was a combination of live focus groups and online focus groups, and it gave us a real sense, for example, that we needed to optimize for Android because in certain cases a large proportion of their consumer segment was on that device. They were moving at the time from BlackBerry to Android. Now we're seeing more iPhone usage, especially with Verizon carrying the iPhone and Sprint. And so we go back and continually resurvey to make sure that we're touching those devices properly. Again, in tablet world, you can be pretty sure that it's going to be an iPad that is the primary device right now. And then the question is, within your demographic segment, if you're appealing to teenagers, they're not likely to have one. If you're appealing to the 25 to 45 segment, there's a high likelihood that they do have one or will soon. For example, tablet penetration in the United States doubled in the month of December 2011. Thanks to both iPad and Amazon Kindle, for example.
Okay. Another question we have in here, we've received is, can you talk about a couple ways that retailers might be able to integrate the tablet into the in-store shopping experience?
Yes. It's a great question. There are several ways to do it. The first, if you have not deployed a kiosk, the tablet is basically, once you tether it, because you don't want it to be too portable, a kiosk device that can be put on the counter. We're seeing this happen, for example, in jewelry sections. We're seeing it happen in cosmetic sections, where people often want to look at things without, let's call it the intrusion of a sales associate sometimes. So it's a great next-generation kiosk, very affordable, very flexible. The second opportunity, and we're seeing this from Lowe's in the home furniture or the house care hardware industry, and we're also seeing it in Nordstrom, is the deployment of tablets in the hands of store associates so that when they're away from a desktop or a fixed place, they can get access to inventory information. They can, in certain cases, Neiman Marcus is providing personalization that lets people know who checked into the store know what associates are there. The associate can get a profile from the consumer if they have an account and can use their prior purchase history as a way of engaging them for, you know, today's interests, if you will. So check out Neiman Marcus, check out Nordstrom, check out Lowe's as examples of that kind of, let's call it cross-functional behavior, not simply driving the consumer to a kiosk-like experience, but actually empowering the associate to carry, you know, store information, inventory information, and ultimately personalized consumer information with them.
Okay. Another question here from an audience member regarding two parts to this about merchandising on your tablets. Is there a recommendation of the number of products shown? And also, what are your thoughts on using search versus product recommendations? You have any thoughts on that?
Can you ask me the first one again?
Yeah, best practices around for online retailers who are selling products on tablets. What do you think about recommendations around number of products that are optimum to be shown? And then the second part was search versus product recommendations.
Okay.
Is there a better way to go there?
For the merchandising question in terms of number of products, I don't want to dance around it. It's kind of case by case. It depends on how you like to display your wares. I think what the tablet enables you to do is tell a better story around the product or around the ensemble or to pull related items into the experience. So if you're looking at blouses, enable the consumer to slide and pull in shoes, for example. Give them access to a separate view of inventory associated with things that complement the outfit that they're looking at. Or if it's a housewares presentation, you know, you're looking at blenders, coffee makers, microwaves, things like that, be able to enable the consumer to pull in alternate views of that product. Obviously, the ratings and reviews, we work closely with Bazaar Voice, and we're seeing some great response there. So the ability to provide the consumer with a more leisurely kind of 360 view of what you're selling. And again, the behavior is a little bit or maybe even a lot different from the desktop, where it's directional, transactional, you know, I'm going through the catalog, I want to find this thing, versus the tablet where you're sitting in a chair on a couch at a dining room table and you're literally browsing and absorbing a lot more information around the product. So you do have the opportunity to do that. You can unclutter your presentation as well, so you don't need to feel compelled to have 12 SKUs on the screen unless you want to do that around a particular line of clothing and then enable the consumer to pinch and zoom on the object that they're most interested in and then begin to deliver information against that. In terms of search versus, I guess, would browsing be the right way to put it? Would you go back to that question? Sorry.
Yeah, search versus product recommendations, I guess, serving up recommendations to the consumer.
So we're finding with the work we're doing that recommendations are, again, if they're supported by a deeper experience, not just people who like this, like that, but you would like this because, you know, you have room both intellectually with the consumer and physically with the tablet form factor to bring a broader view of the product around to them and maybe pull in additional recommendations or additional options for how they might wear it or use the product, which is a little bit different from enabling forward search, for example, and things like that, which is very useful. But can be almost two directional. You're kind of pushing the consumer down a path as opposed to letting them pull themselves down that path, if that particular mixed metaphor works.
Right. Okay, next question we have is in reference to the section on couch commerce. What are some ways or best practices that you can recommend for brands to take advantage of this couch commerce phenomenon?
The first thing that I would say, and again, depending on what your marketing strategy is and what your touch points are, is making sure that you have cross-channel calls to action. So if you run commercials, have a little tag at the end that promotes your website, promotes your app, that sort of thing. If you're running print, whether it's standalone stuff or in circulars, you can use a call to action, whether it's, again, the URL, whether it's a QR code, which consumers are adopting and will use in a fixed environment with a tablet. They're not going to pull the tablet out when they're on the street, but they'll use their smartphone for that. You know, are a couple of ways of doing this. And, again, creating consistent awareness around the fact that, you know, you have a tablet-optimized experience, whether it's for the app or, as Matt talked about, with your web design, that you can enable the consumer to immerse themselves without losing the quality of content or depth of content that you have on your destination website.
Okay. The next question I have is in regards to other tablet design that you've spoken a lot about the iPad and sort of that penetration that it's had into the marketplace. Is there any other tablet devices besides the iPad that you see that marketers will be needing to be focused on going forward?
I watched the Samsung Galaxy family for Android. The disappointment with Android, and I say that because 2 years ago I was really bullish, and I still am, but they don't have the ecosystem that Apple obviously has created over the last decade, and there's a lot of fragmentation in the experiences because there's different flavors of Android out there that people build to, different device profiles, those sorts of things. So while it's not as difficult as it was 5 years ago to design for the mobile consumer across a lot of fragmented operating systems, browsers, all that stuff, you still have fragmentation in Android world, and that's holding it back as a B2C platform, in my opinion. For B2B, I think it's extremely strong, and there's a number of things we're doing, but that's not the conversation we're having today. But Samsung, very strong, very committed. The new device is testing Steve Jobs' rule that a tablet needs to be, you know, 10 inches diagonal or go home, because they're building some tweener products between the smartphone 4 or 5 inch diagonal and the standard tablet 9 or 10 inch diagonal. I think you will see a renewed push on Android tablets in the second half of this year. From a number of vendors, and you're going to see price points that really, you know, go to $200 and below and become a pretty compelling cost-performance challenge for Apple, to be honest with you. But for the foreseeable future, I think the iPad is the engine driving engagement and conversion for consumer-based behavior.
Okay. Well, we're just about out of time, so I want to take this opportunity to thank Stephen Burke and Mac Rover for their insights today. And just want to give a quick apology for the jumpiness of the slides there at the end. Some technical glitches. We apologize for that.
Oh, don't be so nice, Joe. It was bad driving on my part.
And lastly, on behalf of Retail Online Integration and the Social Annex, I want to thank you again for attending this session. If you're interested in discussing anything that you heard during this presentation, we encourage you to visit the Networking Lounge to chat live with other session attendees. You can also visit the info booth to fill out our show survey to let us know about your experience today. And lastly, if you missed any of today's sessions, you can add them to your briefcase and view at your convenience in the on-demand environment. Have a great evening, everyone. Thank you.